Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. We're thinking of all the things we could be, we should be, we must be thankful for in the state of Alabama, because they're the things that make Alabama what it is. These 450 species of fish, these 40 species of oaks, these dozen species of hickories, these 100 species of crawfish. Okay, call them 98. 98 species of crawfish. We'll find two more very soon, I guarantee. In fact, I think we've probably already identified several more species of crawfish that we're going to have to give names to. Alabama's incredible, the crawfish state. Yeah, there it is. Things like mussels, things like snails, things that we used to make part of our lives and now we just kind of ignore. And that's to our detriment. We lose stuff when we lose the richness of where we are. We lose the advantage of being where we are when we don't understand where we are. Boy, we've had to be thankful for some crazy stuff this morning, including roaches. But you know, there's a reason to be thankful for roaches. You're not thankful when they come in your house, but they're doing things out in your yard. You should see it. I know they're doing things in Tony's yard, and it's good stuff. It's beneficial stuff. You know, I'm going to try to say this as politely as I can, Tony. You know, we think, oh, gosh, I need to go get some chicken manure. I need to go get some cow manure because that's where fertilizer comes from. But here's the interesting thing. Most of the food that is eaten by your plants comes from bug poop and bacteria poop that's being broken down. That's what makes the topsoil. Literally, that's what makes the topsoil. And that's what's happening there. It's like earthworm poop, you know? But earthworms aren't the only things out there doing it. There are lots of other creatures, and they're all making topsoil. That's how what topsoil is. It's basically, that's what it is. The decomposing parts of all of those insects and invertebrates and other things out there working it over the organic matter in your soil. It's what makes topsoil great. Maybe you don't like to think of it that way, but that's the way it is. That's how it works. It's really good. So it's funny sometimes the things you need to be thankful for. They need to be thankful for. John, I'm listening. Thanks for holding on. You still there? John, can you hear me?
Hello?
I hear you barely.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Hold on a second.
Let's see. Can you hear me now?
Sir?
Go ahead, John.
In the recent storm, I lost my privacy, and I'm thinking about planting either bottle brush plants or sweet verbatim or possibly cane or red tips. Do you have a suggestion?
Well, the first thing I would say is do not plant red tips, or you could, but then you'll have to replant them and replant them and replant them because they are very subject to a lot of diseases. So knock the red tips off. Now, give me your list again because I didn't hear some of them very well. The first one was
brush plants.
Yeah.
Sweet verbatim or something like that.
Sweet verbatim. Let me, sweet olive, is that what we're talking about, you think?
The local nursery called them sweet verbatim, is how I got it.
Sweet verbatim. I have no idea. Sweet viburnum?
Yes, there you go.
Okay, that one's not going to do that well, I don't think. And I'm not sure what they mean I would not recommend that. Sweet olive would be much better. So a plant called sweet olive, which is not a true olive. It's not an edible olive, but we sometimes call it sweet olive or tea olive. It's sometimes called would be a really good shrub for that area. That would be good. And what was your there was a third and fourth
bottle brush.
And then there was a one just before you got to the
just had three. Cane. I'm sorry.
Cane. Oh yeah, bamboo. So yeah, bamboo is great. And for a quick hedge, there's nothing that beats it. Now listen. Since we started at bamboo, let's go there. You gotta get the bamboo that doesn't spread, that doesn't run. You want a bamboo that's a clumper. Okay? If you get a bamboo that spreads, it's great, it's wonderful, but you'll curse. You will curse a lot. Okay. So you want to get a clumper, and there's some great clumpers out there. And listen, you got to write this down so that we don't get so that you don't get it mixed up, John. Write down the name BAMBUSA, Bambusa. Bambusa, okay. Multiplex, MULTIPLEX. And almost any of those Bambusa multiplex will do real well. Some are shorter than others. Some will be only 6 or 8 feet tall. Some will be, up to 25 or 30 feet tall. And they all make great hedges and great screens. And I highly recommend them. They can be really beautiful. And they're quick. They're going to get size on them about as quick as anything you could plant. So bamboo is great. Sweet olive is sweet olive can be really, really nice. Camellias can be nice if you have the time to wait on them. They make a great hedge. So there's some great larger camellias that can make really, really beautiful hedges, and they'll be great too.
Suggest bottle brush, or you do?
But calistamen is great. Make sure you get a good big calistamen. It depends on what size you want it to be. The calistamen is going to be about 6 to 8 feet tall. And it's pretty hardy. You're talking about the red bottle brush, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's evergreen, and that's a benefit. So that can work very well too. And if you're happy with that height, they will achieve that height pretty quickly, and they'd be fine. How long is this hedge going to be?
It's going to be 100 foot or more.
Oh, that's a lot of calistamens. That's a lot of red.
Yes, sir.
Here's a suggestion. You're going to get really tired of just one plant over 100 feet. Use several different plants. So maybe plant a few large, plant two or three magnolias in that space. Don't trim them up. Never trim them. Let them come all the way to the ground, right?
Right.
Two or three magnolias and space them out or make them pretty, make it attractive. Plant some calistamens there. Plant some sweet olives and plant them in clusters. Plant 3 or 4 or 5 of the same kind of thing in one place and then another. And that way it won't look like you got this. It's going to be oppressive having that much. I don't think. And you could have so many colors, and you could have blooms at multiple times a year, and you might even plant a few camellias in there. That could be really pretty. And then you could have color all year long. So camellias and bottle brushes and maybe some, you could plant some bamboo in there too just to give it a different texture along with sweet olive and, try a few of those sweet viburnums, whatever they are. But I wouldn't go to town on them. And the only thing I'd take off your list is definitely under no circumstance plant the red tips. I'm surprised people still sell them. But
Let me ask, is all of this evergreen?
All the ones that we talked about are, yes, except for the Sweet by Burnham.
Okay, great. Okay, I want evergreen.
All right. Hey, we're going to be back, folks.
I was raised in the country, that's a natural fact. Food on the table from the garden out back. Everyone working to make the land their own. Red clay cracking where the silver queen grows. Running with your...
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah. So, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning. We're playing gardening. Got some neat pictures coming in. John sent me great pictures of sourwoods. John, look at that color. Is that not – how do you describe that color? It is like a combination of pink and lavender and orange and red all at the same time. It's just an amazing color on those things, isn't it? Ahi mangoes are blooming now, fruiting now. They do it. They do it during winter. They love it. Are they too early? Well, no. They're happy. They're perfectly happy being where they are. They're good. They'll keep producing. The one thing, but if you're going to overwinter your peppers, it can be a challenge. You don't want to pot them up in too big a pot because the roots won't grow out as much, and it's hard to keep the water right. If you do increase the size of pots, don't force them into really heavy growth right now. But if you do increase the size of the pots, just increase it just a little bit, just a little bit. Because the roots aren't going to grow as well or as strong over the winter, and it's easy to overwater in winter. I think those plants may make it in the pots you have them in. Over the winter, and they'll be fine. It's great. I mean, the great thing about it is, boy, you get to have peppers in the winter, and this is what we want. You know, peppers all year long. You got it, no problem. Peppers do not have a season when they produce. They're going to produce as long as conditions are right. So there's not a big trade-off in getting the peppers fruiting in winter. They're good. They're just fine. Just fine. So let's see. Let's come back to Dale. Dale, are you there?
Yes, sir.
So tell me what you got going on.
Yes, sir. I live up in Citronelle, Alabama now, and we were in the feed store the other day, and I bought some a lady was selling some Mayhaw. Is that how you say it? Mayhaw jelly?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And we tried it on some biscuits the other morning. It was delightful. And I was just wondering if I'd like to buy something that's going to grow in Citronelle, Alabama, like you always go to buy something from Boston or wherever. And I needed to know where I would be to purchase a tree like that down in my area.
So Mayhaw. Mayhaw. And you can find Mayhaws in lots of places. I mentioned a place that that sells Mayhaws, just fruits and exotics. Go on the internet, look at their Mayhaws, just fruits and exotics. And they have a good selection.
Yeah. I heard you mention that a couple of weeks ago on your show.
Yeah, it's a good. They have a good selection of Mayhaws. You can find Mayhaws in other places too. You'll generally need a couple of different varieties of Mayhaws to produce the fruit, but they're a lot of fun. One of the best experiences I ever had was running down the Pascagoula River, Chickasahay Pascagoula, and collecting wild Mayhaw berries in the swamps. And you will find wild Mayhaw trees in certain areas in the swamps, and the water will just be floating with the berries.
Right.
When you hit them at the right time of year, which is generally November,
okay.
And just a great time. But the trees can do real well. Dale, I will tell you one thing, and this is an issue. when we introduced apples into North America, we introduced a number of diseases, and one of them is a rust that affects mayhaws. And if you've got a lot of cedars,
right,
cedar trees, they will spread that rust to the mayhaws.
Well,
and
that may be a problem for me, because I bought some property up here, and we clear cut the property for pasture for cows, and I'm the only pasture on my street. Everything either side of me is virtually all pine trees. Would that be a problem?
No, pine trees are not a problem. Cedars are a problem. So you may be in
cedar.
A fine place.
I got you, sir. Cedar.
So
yes,
it's
sir.
Cedar, not pines. And
right.
So it would be the cedar trees that would be the problem.
Right, right.
Is
there a variety of mayhaw that you would recommend, or do I need to get two or three different kinds so the pollinate?
Just get a couple of different kinds and make sure that they bloom at the right time. And Just Fruits and Exotics will help you do that. They may be sold out this time of year. I don't know. I haven't checked, but you know, get them ready to plant for next year. And I love mayhaws. They're absolutely wonderful. They're a great southern delicacy.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want to try and get something that's indigenous to this area. I've got some satsumas that are from around here, and I've got figs. I've also got some kind of plum tree that produces a very sweet plum.
Oh, good.
I'd like to try something different. Well, it's actually from Alabama, you know.
Right. Well, and that's right. So that's good. And the mayhaws will be really great.
Right, right. Well, I appreciate you giving me some advice. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Dale. Hey, Bruce, you there?
Yes.
Tell me what's up.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me, Bruce?
Yeah, I can hear you.
So I'm listening.
I've got a solaria hedge that's gotten tall and leggy, about 15 feet tall. I need to cut it back so it only goes up to about 8 or 9 feet where the foliage is at that height. And I need to know the right way and when to cut it back, and how far to cut it back.
Okay. My mind is going blank. What kind of hedge is it?
Solaria, C-E-Y-E-L-E-R-A. Or C-E-Y-E-L-E-R-A.
Clayera, Clayera, good, 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 Clayera. Yeah, you switch the E and the L on me.
Okay.
Clayera, Clayera. So, yeah, Clayera is tricky. So you want to reduce the height of it?
Yes. It's about 15 years old, and it's got about 15 feet tall and doesn't need to be that tall.
Okay. And you know, how much do you want to reduce it?
I'd like the top to be about 9 feet.
Okay. That's a lot of cutting back.
Yeah.
You know, I think Clayera will stand this. At this point, it's going to be really hard to trim it back. You could try, and I think it'll be difficult. I think you're probably going to just need to cut it back to the ground and start over, and then try to manage it as it grows taller. And that's possible with Clayera, because Clayera doesn't grow that fast. It'll grow pretty fast back from the roots. But I don't think – I would say cut the plants back to about 2 feet tall.
Okay.
And let them resprout, because otherwise I don't think you're going to be able just to trim it back gently at that stage to get that kind of reduction in height. So I think I'd cut it back and try to start it over.
Okay, what time of year would be the best to do that?
Yeah, that's a great question, and you wouldn't want to do it now. You'd probably want to do it about February. Would probably be ideal, and it'll be ready to put on new growth already anyway, and it'll resprout pretty quickly. It'll probably be less stress then, and so I would shoot for February.
Okay, and cut it at a slight angle.
Yeah, well, another good point. Very slight angle on the top cut. Yes, would keep any rot from developing. I think the Clayera will stand it just fine. I think it'll stand it just fine. And I would say with the Clayera, I would go ahead and make it about 2 feet would probably be best. You might could go for 3 feet. 3 feet might be okay. Maybe try it at 3 feet and see what happens. Let's try it at 3 feet. And that way we're sure we've got plenty of dormant buds and a little bit of branching, and I think that'll be fine. So given that you want 9 feet out of it, 3 feet is probably just about right.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Hey, Bill, you there? Bill, can you hear me? We lost Bill, did we, maybe? Bill, you there? Yeah, okay. Sorry about that. How many species of butterflies do we have? Wayne in Irvington. Wayne, I don't know. I should sit and think about this. But it's interesting to sit down and just start calculating how many different incredible things we have here in Alabama. Not just a football team.
How the weather in the country? How the weather down south? How the weather in the Delta? How the food tastes in your mouth?
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of questions this morning and lots to be thankful for. Did I mention, in addition to 450 species of fish and 180 species of mussels and 100 species of crawfish and 35 species of turtles, did I mention 200 species of aquatic snails? Now, this is pretty cool. If you haven't seen some of these snails, they're absolutely beautiful, beautiful things. And Alabama is famous for it. I know not here in Alabama because we don't pay attention sometimes, but in the rest of the world, Alabama is famous for its huge concentration of aquatic snails with these beautiful shells. They have a real interesting role in making rivers better places. And they're great fish food, which is important enough, too. So when you got a lot of species of fish, I guess it's probably good that you got a lot of species of snails. One of them that specializes in snails are things like shellcrackers. Ever heard of that? There are a lot of fish that actually have that are adapted to eating things like snails and even mollusk. That's the way Alabama is. Bill has called me.
Yes.
And I'm listening, Bill. Tell me what's going on.
Well, the reason for my call is I read an article about the Aslava Creek, and you were mentioned and quoted extensively through it. And my question is, what is the future of the Aslava Creek? Is there a will, and is there a way to clean it up?
What an interesting question, because, you know, Aslava Creek has been turned into a ditch over most of its length. And it's a lot of its ability to absorb stuff and to keep clean has been, we've robbed it because we've robbed ourselves of the floodplain where that creek used to spread. But there's still an opportunity to do a lot of work on that creek. Is there a will for it? I don't know. You know, one of the interesting things, and we talk about it as if it's a good thing. When we say, okay, we're going to make these sewers carry, we're going to make the sewers and the storm drains carry as much water as possible out of our neighborhoods as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we've done. And we've done all these storm drain improvements, which means that our streets don't get as wet sometimes anymore as they used to. But all that's going straight into the creek. And so you really have to start thinking at the source of the water at this point, what kind of runoff do we have? One of the things that I've always thought about that each individual homeowner can do is to retain as much water in their yard as is possible by creating small ponds and other things that capture runoff before, at least capture the first inch or two of rain. If we all did small things like that, and if, say, the majority or even half the homeowners did it, it would, the results in a Slava Creek would be huge, even after all the damage we've done to it. If we can just stop the runoff.
It's a shame, because when you have an urban waterway, that can be a treasure to the community. Just an absolute treasure. Above and beyond wildlife, it looks nice. I've seen sections of the Slava Creek where it's almost park-like. You know, you could walk along it. I also see in my neighborhood, as an example, the storm drains terminate back about, 60 or 80 feet from the road, and they just dump into a ditch, and they get so clogged and so fouled with not only just debris, but, you know, they're overgrown. So it's just kind of a shame.
Yeah, it is, and it is, and there are things you can't go back to. Slava Creek is one of my earliest memories in Mobile, we used to play in it. Probably shouldn't have. Got the water all over us. No telling what kind of stuff was in it at the time. We would jump off the road bridge onto the sandbars down below. Very vivid memories of a Slava Creek and turtles and fish in it, even at that time. Even then and still they're still there. You can still see them, and there's still some great places, but we treat a Slava Creek as if it's a ditch. And you know, one of the old things that I think we don't realize is that a lot of these streams didn't have a very the channel of the stream wasn't very deep, and it wasn't very clear. Sometimes in a Slava Creek, if you were to go back to the old Slava Creek, what you would find is it was pretty shallow. You probably could get across it, you know, probably just wade across it knee-high over most of its length. But it was it may have even had multiple channels that just sort of interbraided as they went through the longleaf pine. And it's hard to get that back.
Yeah.
And it's a real shame to lose that. On the other hand, there are things we can do to improve what's left of a Slava Creek. And each of us doing it in our own yards, and each of us not expecting, when we do city planning and when we do city engineering, to think about what's coming out of a Slava Creek is now going straight into Mobile Bay. I mean, we're just piping things, the worst stuff, the paints we pour out in our yards, the whatever we're pouring out, it's going straight into Mobile Bay because there's no buffer in a Slava Creek anymore. So
yeah.
If we can think about what happens in our own yards, that's where we make the difference.
Well, like I say, it's a shame. It's deteriorating, and it's becoming a blight on our city. It really is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, thank
Bill,
you.
Thanks.
I appreciate your comment.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me. We should talk more about that. I mean, and it's, Bill, thanks for bringing it up. We really can talk more about how to make Mobile Bay better because the Slava Creek is better, and our fishing is better because the Slava Creek is better, and we make a Slava Creek better now by thinking about our own yards that interact with that creek. And there are a lot of different drainages in Mobile. 12 mile and 3 mile is one drainage. Slava is another. But each of those can be pretty important. Dog River, for all we've done to it, still has, there are many ways we can make things better there. So a very good point. Very good point there, Bill. And thank you for doing that. Rusty notes, speaking of all of the different species, how many species of birds did I say? 420 species of birds. I'd love to talk about them. I'd love to talk about quail. I'd love to talk about, but the white pelicans are back, and they're part of, you know, they are the markers of the seasons. And people up, I always like to say, people in Detroit, I mean, they got to depend on robins to tell them what season it is, because, you know, that's the kind of thing that comes and goes up there. And the robins are nice, and robins start spring in Detroit. Robins, when robins leave Mobile, you know spring is starting in Detroit. Robins are not the signal of spring here. But white pelicans, they are the signal that fall is here. And it's beautiful. They come in right around the end of September, 1st of October, just like clockwork every year. They really begin to show up, and you see them. What beautiful birds, those white pelicans. They'll leave again. Oh, when? Is it about April, May? About April, May. They'll move up north to breed when things get warmer up in the northern tier of states. Let's hope that the lands where they breed up there are not all farmed to death, which is a real danger. But the white pelicans, gosh, really something else really to be thankful for, and something to enjoy. What else we got? Let's see. We had some other questions. So Jim sent me some pictures of mayhaw trees next to the cypress swamp on the Chickasaw River in Greene County. We got to talking about mayhaws earlier, as a great crop in the swamps where it occurs naturally. There aren't many cedar trees around, so you don't get the juniper, the juniper rust that can sometimes infect the trees. White cedars aren't a host. It's just the red cedars. You don't see them as much around the swamps, and people, it's so cool to go up in the boats and into those black waters, and just to see them and see those berries floating on the water, brimming up on the water this time of year. Collect them with nets. What a great old tradition. You know, I think that must have been going on. How long do you think that was going on? How many millennia do you think people were gathering mayhaw berries out of the swamp? It was such an easy thing to do. It was so natural. It's such a part of where we are and who we are and what we are, a really, really cool thing. Thinking about those mayhaws. Another picture of azaleas, two different colors on one plant. And you know, what's happened is that the white is the sport. The purple is the original plant, and it produced a white sport, and now it wants to go back to being its original purple again. I'm not sure what that is, but it might be a Murasaki. But we'll look a little bit closer. Hey, give us a call this morning. We got a little bit of time left. 251-343-0106.
Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I get down on your bending knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yes, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Somebody asked me how many butterflies there are in Alabama. What is your guess? You know, I'm referring to Sarah Bright and my old friend and her book on butterflies of Alabama. And I think Sarah puts the number at about 86 known species of butterflies in Alabama. I would not be surprised if there are more, but, you know, there are a lot of them. Moths are even more prolific. Moths are really cool as well, and something we should think about. Somebody says, my neighbor is digging up a large sago. Is it worth trying to salvage them? That's a tough question, but probably they'll do okay. If you dig a big enough root ball, it's going to be a lot to lug around. It depends on how much you want to pay yourself. If you're going to pay yourself, $15 an hour, you might calculate and decide, I'm going to spend 4 hours working on getting this thing in position. And in the ground, that's 4 times 15 is $60. Is it a $60 worth of plant if you pay yourself $15 an hour? I don't know. There's the kind of calculation I might try. You can get cycads from other places, but just something to think about. Something to think about. It's worth $60 to do that. And can you move it? And you need a big root ball. There's lots of interesting questions there. Lots of interesting questions. David Hubble sent me the most beautiful picture of a melaton casserole. It's just beautiful. It makes me hungry. Of course, it's got a lot of cheese on it. But a little lump crab meat added in. Yeah, you got it. Cook it so that the crab meat comes on. How do you do it, David, though? Because you don't want to cook the crab meat too long. It's a beautiful looking thing, though. And David asks, how much room would a Mayhall tree need? They're not large, David. You're beginning to exhaust the space in your yard. But, you know, around the edge, they need a lot of sunlight, and they cast a lot of shade underneath them. But they're not big trees. They're not even as big as dogwoods, really. And you can keep them pruned. They're not going to be as big as a satsuma. But I would say expect them to take up about the same space as a satsuma would. Michael is asking me, can you use neal oil? And I can see that you can see where your autocorrect is why it came up with neal oil. Can I use neem oil on cabbage worms? Certainly you could. I'll tell you, the better thing is probably to use BT at this time of year. Something like Dipel or Thuricide. Pick off the big worms and then use Dipel or Thuricide. It'll probably be better. Banana Gene, are you still there?
Yeah, man, I'm still here. I'm not worried about no bananas today, but I want to talk to you about straightening these creeks out here. And they're talking about doing that at Municipal Park and running that all the way down where you can get on the riverfront down there. And And I was at the meeting one time out here by the park where you was working. You weren't working at night, but anyway. And the mayor was talking about this thing, and I said, look, I said, you straight shot that thing down there, you ain't got to put a ditch.
That's right.
But he said, well, you know, you get a whole lot of water moved out of there. I said, diarrhea moves a lot of stuff, too, but you don't want that either.
Well, Gene, you said the right thing.
He does that.
Yeah, so it is an issue.
The only pretty creek left anymore.
That's right. And we don't think about that. It's just like get the water out of our yards, and then we say, well, you know, what happened to the fish? Why don't we have any fish anymore? What's happened to Mobile Bay? Gene, people talk about what industry is going to do to Mobile Bay. People talk about what ash mounds or whatever are going to do to Mobile Bay. And it's serious. It's a big issue. But nothing is more serious than what we do to Mobile Bay every day by just not caring about what comes out of our yards and by trying to straight pipe the stuff into Mobile Bay.
Well, what a lot of people don't realize is when you run the water off the ground out here, you drop the water table in this particular area here, and you're going to have less groundwater.
That's right, it's happening.
It's amazing. And I told him, I said, "Look, I said, also, whoever built that creek, the good Lord, Mother Nature, whatever you believe in, had a whole lot more going on than we did. He built it that way for a reason."
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, that's one of my favorite gripes. I'll let you get back to you whatever you're doing this morning.
Gene, I'm so glad you called. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it is an issue, and we should talk more about it. I hope, if some of you, and I challenge you, tell me what's going to have more impact on Mobile Bay, the ash ponds up around at the power plant, which are serious issues, no question, big issues, or what's happening on either side of the bay right now in terms of straight piping crap into the bay. Excuse me, I didn't mean to use that word, but that's what it is. And we have, and it's an important question, and we've got to deal with both. And we don't deal with one at all. We really have made things worse in terms of our individual, not some big company's footprint, but our individual impact on these creeks and what it means to Mobile Bay. Bill, I'm listening. We don't have a lot of time, but I'm listening. Tell me what's going on.
Okay, recent transplant from Kentucky.
Yes, sir.
Bought a lot next to our condo, has four live oaks on it. We're used to red oaks, white oaks, with great big leaves on them. So we've got these many, many, many small leaves that fall off constantly. What the heck do I need to do with them?
They make great mulch. They make great topsoil. They're one of the easiest topsoils to make. They break down much more quickly than those big leaves from Kentucky do. I make a pile about 4 feet high and 4 feet wide, and I plant my tomato there after they break down after about 6 months. So you could pile those leaves up. If you pile those leaves up in, say, October, they'll be broken down, and ready for planting your tomatoes in March.
Sounds like a plan. One other question.
Will
bottle brush buckeyes make it down here?
Yeah, I love bottle brush. Now, you're talking about the white bottle brush?
Yeah.
And they're native to Alabama. In fact, Alabama is about the only state where they are native. I don't even think they're native in any other state. But they do not do as well on the coast. There is a bottle brush population in North Baldwin County. I have seen it before. It may be wiped out by now. It may be under somebody's house, but it did exist natively in North Baldwin County. I don't think it's going to do quite as well on Fort Morgan.
Question if they grew in sand or not.
Yeah, it's not going to like it there much. It really prefers clays. If there is a shell mound or something, it'll grow fine on that shell mound. If you've got a place where there's shells, it'll do better there and probably do okay. If you give it full sun on a shell mound, it'll probably do fairly well. So that would be, but you may find an area in your yard that have got lots of shells where you could grow that plant.
I sure appreciate it.
Bill, give us more time to talk next time. We're about to run out of time today. Johnny, good to hear from you. Sorry, I'm hearing that music. It's the end of the day, but we'll be back next week.
My girl, don't.